Thanks,
Alicia, and I hope you're well. Hope you've had a good day. Don't worry about that yet. I want you to turn to the person next to you and just share something that you're thankful for from today. It's a good discipline, isn't it, to stay thankful? I'm sure there's lots of things to say. It can be anything from this morning, from the fun stuff. Just something with your neighbour. What are you giving thanks for from today? Good. Shall we get back together there? It's great to be together, isn't it? Lots to give thanks for, and wonderful to be here. You may have seen, this is the moment, Wes, for your, poor old Wes on the decks, he's doing 100 things. You may have seen this in Metro, I think it was a few weeks ago. Richard Branson decided just to drop in. It was a totally surprise visit to Virgin's Sydney office, and unfortunately, basically, this poor chap was caught asleep when the big boss decided to visit, and rather cruelly, it was Richard Branson himself who tweeted this picture of the guy. Apparently, one eye opened for a very short while, saw that it was Richard Branson, and then his eye shut again, which is probably the right thing to do. And it reminded me of something that happened to me when I was quite a new staff member at St. Helens. William, you won't remember this, but it was a Sunday morning and you rang me very early, something to do with the prayers. You had a couple of missed calls. I then realised there'd been a couple of missed calls early on a Sunday morning from William. And when he finally got through to me, the message was, "Murdoch, wake up, you sluggard." He'd been in Proverbs, he told me, for his quiet times, which was unfortunate for me, because he then went on to quote from Proverbs, "A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber." It was very encouraging. Well, today's psalm is a song. It's about the God who never, ever falls asleep, that's right, on the job. And that might sound obvious, but you know, you can't take that for granted in your gods. Do you remember Elijah mocking the prophets of Baal as they cried, "Oh, Baal, answer us. Oh, maybe he's fallen asleep." Psalm 121, verse 3. Second half says, "He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep." The songs of ascents, songs for journeys upward, we said. This discrete collection of hearty anthems for them then and us now to keep us going as we travel home to the great city of God. How's life on the journey? I hope you talked about that with one or two folk. Last night's psalm came really from the negative end of the spectrum, didn't it? Tonight's psalm is connected, and it's something else we might reply when we're asked about our Christian walk. How's life on the journey? Well, I'm feeling I need help. This traveller is looking up to the hills, you see verse 1, and I take it not singing "the hills are alive with the sound of music." It might be that they are the hills of home, but they're so distant. It could actually be that the hills themselves will be the source of the obstacles along the way. Either way, I look to the hills and I'm saying help. Verse 1, "I lift up my eyes to the hills. From where does my help come?" I visited a 101-year-old Christian lady called Olive this week. She's completely all on the ball. She knew everything that had been going on in the news over the last few weeks. And she gave me a mini gospel sermon during my visit. I think that was because I told her that I was a Church of England clergyman, and she saw it as an evangelistic opportunity. When I convinced her that I was a Christian, I read her this psalm, but I actually didn't get past the first line before Olive started to spout off the psalm, and she said the whole of it totally off the top of her head, told me she reads this psalm every day. It's a very familiar psalm, but I think maybe the context of it might not be so familiar. It's specifically about the help that God's pilgrim people need if we're going to make it home. See, if you were one of the original pilgrims on that climb up to Jerusalem, hills ahead could be challenging. Looks like a long, rocky road, plenty that's unknown, and frightening that could jump out at you. The final destination, looking very far away. Again, relatively easy, I think, for us to connect with. Surrounded by those lying lips, remember? Those lies and deceits that could weary my faith away. The father of lies, we didn't mention him specifically last night, but always prowling around, trying to drag me off the road. That war that began to be described in Psalm 120, verse 7, because we were trying to speak for peace. That hostility, I think, hots up as the songs of ascent progress. So because we won't get to dip into all of them, let me just show you that. So Psalm 123, verse 4. Look, see, the lying lips are now being personally scornful. And in Psalm 124, verse 3, they're properly angry at me. And by Psalm 129, verse 3, it feels like they're ploughing upon my back. That sounds painful, doesn't it? Sounds a bit like Jesus' sufferings. See, there is this spectrum about exactly how the hostility of the world will come to God's people, but it will come. Could get worse for you if you go away from this week emboldened to speak for Jesus more. Will I keep going all the way under this kind of strain? Especially when you combine the hostility that's out there with the fickle heart that lives in here. Prone to wander was one of the lines that we sang last night. I always think that that's one of the truest lines we ever sing in Christian hymns when I think about myself. Will I wander off the right path completely before I get to the city? Just think of the sheer number of years that some of you might have left. You know, you could live to be 101 like Olive. How many more years of that is it trying to be truth-believing, lie-rejecting, Jesus-speaking, not settling down because I'm just a sojourner kind of person? It's a long time. And verse 7 is kind of even more general about the things that could knock us off track. All evil, all harm, any of the nasty shocks that might come our way in a broken world. Will we get through them? Still on the road. This climb home is not an easy one, see? Help me. Well, the theme tune of this song is that you have a helper. Verse 2, my help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. That line literally reads, my help comes straight from Yahweh. And I really love that as a way of putting it. Because not everyone who says, can I help, is actually able to do you much good, are they? If you ring BT and ask them to redirect your Wi-Fi to a new address, believe me, you can talk to quite a number of people who, despite working for the so-called industry leader, can't seem to actually help you. We sometimes say, can I speak to the management if we're not getting anywhere? Well, you're through directly to head office on this one. My help comes straight from Yahweh. And there's one word, just one word, that this singer keeps swirling round to describe the nature of the help he provides. I wonder if you spotted it. It's in verse 3, have a look. And verse 4,
there's a variation of it in verse 5, and there it is again in verse 7 and verse 8. Anyone spot the word? Yeah, the keeper, he will keep you. We use the word about someone looking after animals, a zoo keeper. It has that sense of a minder figure watching over you, a guardian. A few years ago, I went on a Christian skiing holiday. It was the only time I'd ever been. It was great fun, but I was a terrible skier and spent most of the weeks confined to the nursery slopes, which literally were a nursery. It was basically me and a bunch of six-year-olds, them sort of skiing through your legs kind of thing, and all much more proficient than me. Their group was called the Yeti Club. It was all very cute, matching high-vis outfits, that kind of thing. And they had a keeper watching over them. He was a bloke from New Zealand. And it turned out there was one of him and 18 of the small people. One of them about to fly off a cliff over here. Another hanging, dangling off the ski lift, being dragged up the mountain by the edge of his jacket. And I got talking to their keeper as we were in the queue for the ski lift. I asked him, you know, how do you actually manage to keep an eye on all of them at the same time? And he was very relaxed about the whole thing. He said, it's simple. If you lose a kid, you just pinch one from another group. That was his answer. I was shocked. As far as he was concerned, he counted 18 out. As long as he counted 18 back in, it was job done. And obviously, I can see mothers around the room looking shocked. Dad's thinking, that's not a bad idea, actually. God is not that kind of keeper. Never any danger that he'll zone out or be overstretched or forget your name because your badge has fallen off or nod off or lose one of his own. And see, the thing that gives all of this keeper imagery in verse 3 to 8 its clout is who the keeper is. In verse 2, my help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. So that foot that might slip in verse 3 is a foot that he made. The thing that it might slip on is something that he made. The sun that might strike you by day or the moon by night. You know, there's lots of superstitions in loads of different cultures about harm that can come to you via the moon. Oh, they're both just the big lights that God put in the sky. Genesis 1, verse 16. The all evil of verse 7 and all the harm that might come to you in all the different places you might go out to or come in from, and the times in verse 8 at which you do that, well, he made the time. And all the places, including the faraway lands. See, God's name might have been deleted from the official city motto in Meshech or Kedar or wherever you find yourself a sojourner. But that doesn't make any of those places any less under his sovereign jurisdiction. Verse 7. The Lord will keep you from all evil. He will keep your life. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in from this time forth and forevermore. This is an individual thing. You notice the language of my, and it's interesting that the you words in this psalm are all singular. So insert your name into this psalm if you're a person who trusts him. Be quite a good exercise to do. And remind yourself that day and night, going or coming, now and forever, your help straight from Yahweh. It's beautiful, isn't it? And they are sweeping promises for sure. But there's always a nagging question hanging over a psalm like this, isn't there? Does the help of the great helper actually make any tangible difference. So verse 3, I wasn't out on the field earlier, but did anyone's foot slip during the games this afternoon? Anyone slip up on the obstacle course at all? Maybe somebody did. I know one or two lovely Christians who've had quite nasty falls recently. Or verse 6, anyone ever been struck by the sun? I bet one or two of us have forgotten the factor 15 once or twice. And that's just small stuff. What about bigger ways that God's people experience harm? I was catching up with a friend recently. He's a little bit younger than me. Lovely Christian guy, married to a lovely Christian woman, a couple of young boys. His lovely Christian wife just died one day in November, completely out of the blue. See, the people of God don't walk around in a protective bubble, do we, where all the problems just bounce off and go away? And that's so obvious. I feel it's almost patronizing of me to tell you that. But I think the danger is we could read this and think it's a nice thought. God, my helper, keeping an eye on me. But all the time we're thinking, does God's comprehensive insurance cover actually mean much in the real world? Are we sure he hasn't just nodded off? Well, I want to say there is huge cash value here, if that's an all right way to put it, in terms of what this help means. This is clearly a psalm that lives in the real world. We know that from the psalms that surround it. So last night's psalm, the realism of it, those other psalms going forward that I quoted earlier. There's no sense in which you could say Psalm 121 was written into some naive, charmed existence. Please don't buy any kind of prosperity, health and wealth gospel which tells you verses like this about the surrounding protection of the Lord will make you impervious to trouble. And again, I feel it's almost patronizing to say that to you guys. I know you know that, but we're having to say that all the time to our students at Euston Church, because that kind of gospel gets in at them in all kinds of different ways. Remember the context here. This is specifically about the help that God's pilgrim people need to make it home through a hostile world. And the security here is very precious. It's that nothing can stop God's people from making it because of the character of the helper. Your life, in verse 7, is your soul. It's the same kind of word when Jesus says, what good is it to profit, gain the whole world, but lose your life, your soul? That life is protected. I don't know, did you notice that line? We looked at it earlier in Luke's gospel when Jesus basically said the worst they can do is kill you. I don't know if you find that encouraging. It's supposed to be. And if that feels like, well, what this is saying is that any help God gives us is only going to kick in the future, we need to remember our history. Verse 4, see, when that says, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep, that reminds us that while the help is individual to us, we can look back on things that God has done for us corporately to reassure us of how active he has been in the world. Remember what he did for Israel, the Exodus. Remember the cross that was just a shadow of. Think of the history of God's church. All these promises that he's made and fulfilled so far, God has not accomplished all of this just to then take his eye off the ball and lose one of his own along the way. You know, when we say the homeland, oh, that's the future, I can find it's quite easy in my head to start to believe that that means that God only really is in control and active in that future bit. And that's not right at all, is it? The city is future, but God is not future. God is now, and the help is now. And that's supposed to make a real difference now to our lives. There's an old Puritan prayer. I came across it in a book called The Valley of Vision. Some of you, I guess, will know that book. And it's actually a prayer that they used to pray for the start of a new year. I launch my bark on the unknown waters of this year with thee, O Father, as my harbour, thee, O Son, at my helm, thee, O Spirit, filling my sails. Guide me to heaven. Quite quaint, obviously quite flowery in the language, but full of trust in God's surrounding care to guide me home. In 3 nights' time, we're going to look at another of these Psalms of Ascent that focuses on our response. It focuses on what it really means for us to trust in the Heavenly Keeper. But I think here the focus is on Him and, well, really His competence to get the job done. My help comes straight from Yahweh, who made heaven and earth. Made heaven and earth. I guess if He can speak a whole universe into being and sustain it and keep it, then He can keep little old me. Day and night, going and coming, now and forever, whatever the pressures of our speaking and believing and sojourning. And I hope if you're a Christian, I hope as you look back over the journey so far, I hope we'll all have stories to tell of how the Lord has kept us. I think that's the question that I've put at the bottom of your handout there today. Any stories about how He has been watching over you on the journey? And you know, all this talk about pilgrimage and journeys, it can start to sound a little bit sort of sentimental and romantic. I bet lots of those stories will not be like that at all. There'll be stories of battles and stories of consequences because of your boldness for Jesus, and stories of deep distress. Might be painful stories to talk about if they're very present ones. Sometimes it can take a bit of time to pass by before we're able to look back and really see how He was in it all, keeping us. But He does keep us. Good to step back sometimes and remember the stories. Will I still be a Christian then when I reach Olive's age of 101? I know it's a little bit presumptuous to assume that I'll get there. Will I make it to the end of this hilly climb? Will I still be a sojourner? Or will I have settled down a bit too much? Let me say, if you never worry about all of that, never worry about whether you'll get there, well, it's good to be confident. But there seems to be a godly sense in which God wants to keep us humble, keep us looking to the hills and feeling, I guess, daunted to the extent that this would depend on my own ability to get through all of these battles. Seems that one of the ways God actually keeps His people is by keeping us on our knees, keeping us needing help, recognizing that we can't make this on our own. Some of you are heading back tonight, I know, back to the battlefield. Does this psalm work in a hostile city like London, where Jesus is often a joke, and where the lies and the war can feel so real? Of course, this psalm works in that place. I'm no expert on geography, but I'm sure that when verse 2 says the heavens and the earth, that definitely includes that little area inside the M25, which actually is a very, very small area of the heavens and the earth that come under God's jurisdiction. Definitely includes your workplace and whatever the pressures are there. I was tempted to say at this point as we finish, don't look to the hills, look at the God who's going to get you through. But that's not quite right, actually, because this singer is looking at the hills. Quite difficult not to when you've got a whole mountain range in front of you. I love the way the Bible's always so realistic about life. So here's an exercise I'd love you to do as we finish. This seems to be a psalm to preach to yourself. You notice that? The way it's kind of asking that question in verse 1, and then you're meant to come in with the answer yourself in verse 2. I'll give you a minute to do this exercise now in the quiet, but it'd be something maybe to spend longer on later. First of all, just list, maybe mentally, some of the battles lying ahead or right now as you try and be a faithful sojourner. Maybe some of the things you'd worry would stop you from keeping going on the journey to the New Jerusalem. Think about those things until you're saying, help, which might not be very long for some of us. And then ask yourself the question of verse 1, from where does my help come? And then remind yourself the answer. My help comes straight from Yahweh. Amen.